Welcome to The Mind Coordinator, where we delve deep into understanding and optimizing mental health, resilience, and performance. I'm your host, Dr. David Schoonover, and I'm excited to embark on this journey with you to explore the intricate connections between our minds, emotions, and personal growth. Whether you're an athlete, a coach, a sports enthusiast, or someone interested in mental well-being, this is the place where we navigate the complexities of the mind to unlock our full potential. Join me as we uncover strategies, insights, and conversations that inspire positive change and foster mental resilience in all aspects of life.
You're listening to The Mind Coordinator with Dr. David Schoonover on KSHP, AM 1400, 107.1 FM, and BSX Digital Sports Network.
Hello, good morning, everybody, and I just want to welcome all the people that are listening locally and around the world. Today we have a fantastic man on our show today, coach extraordinaire. I will give you just a very brief intro on him because we could talk about his accolades and accomplishments all day long. Frank Maziata. He has been a coach for 40 years. He's probably seen and done everything there is when it comes to coaching people and ball. But in 40 years, he was the Falcons head coach at Cerritos Junior College. He amassed a 255-160-6 record, 21 bowl appearances, 7 conference championships. And this man is just, he's just an absolute blessing to all those who have the opportunity to have him as a coach. So let's give Coach a big warm welcome here today. Good morning, Coach. How are we doing?
Thank you.
How are we doing today?
Good. So far, so good.
Well, we're really glad to have you on the show, Coach. Your insights are going to be so valuable to everybody who's listening because of your lifelong work as a coach. I'd like to start off this portion, and I want to talk about recruiting, and it's such a big deal these days. I guess recruiting is probably different. Have you seen it over the last decades, how they've changed? Kind of give us, walk us through what your approach is to recruiting. What are some of the key steps or stages in your recruiting process?
Well, I fortunately got to recruit at both levels, the 4-year level and the 2-year level. And it is quite a bit different. At the scholarship level, at the 4-year level, you kind of can pick and choose, and you really kind of can really evaluate it a little bit better. You know what I mean? Because you have something to really go with to offer people. At the community college level, you're just out there beating the bush, and you got to sell your program, and you got to sell what you can do for a kid afterwards. Mm-hmm. And maybe the educational part of it is really probably the most important, because if you can get their education to where someone might take them, they're always usually pretty good athletes. It's just you got to get them in. Again, at the community college, junior college level, usually you get a kid probably because his grades are low. Mm-hmm. Or something's happened, or he hasn't performed as well as he could have. And the scholarships today are a little bit tougher to get, really.
Yeah.
But, you had to, number one, convince a kid he's got to go to school. And number two, playing good football doesn't mean that somebody's just going to pick you up. You got to have the credentials to get in,
Sure.
And they're a little sloppy at the high school level, and some of them don't do a real good job with their grades. And I was very fortunate. I had a lot of great football players that, might have been a little bit, their GPA might have been down. They might have missed a class getting out of high school. And we have such a great educational program at the junior college level that if a kid will really knuckle down and do it, he can usually, finish his grades, get an a lot of times you had to get the degree, the junior college degree to get out. So I was fortunate to have a lot of people to help me, academically, our school was really pretty good. We had a good counseling group and usually the kids that I had, if they did well in school, I got most of them scholarships, knock on wood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really important that you say that, Coach, because a lot, coming out of high school too, it's your local kid. He's a superstar locally, and then when he goes into the college ranks, it's always a little different, right?
Right. Correct. And you know, it's so much different, and especially the area that I was in, you know, I had a little bit of, that was so different because we had low income kids, high income kids, you know, in between. And, a lot of kids, you know, in high school don't take the academic part of it that serious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the college thing now, you miss one or two classes going through it. The scholarship thing wasn't there.
Right.
So, you know, we played a real vital role in the kids, not only his athletic ability, but his ability to get his stuff done in school.
You know, Coach, it's really so important. I would love to see more colleges adhere to that wisdom, because for them it's all about wins. It's about really it's really about wins, and that's really kind of a shame, because what happens is you're setting these kids up for a, you know, big disappointment after 4 years, because there's such a small amount of people that actually go pro.
Right.
You know, Coach, in this recruiting process, you've got to build relationships. So how do you build relationships with, like, some of these recruits and their families throughout this process? And if you could tell us, what kind of strategies do you use to, you know, to connect with these prospects and earn their trust?
Well, you know, I like talking to you right now. It has a lot to do with your own personal experiences. I learned a long time ago that I had coaches that took a little, you know, special interest in, like I was talking about, my academic part of it. The athletic thing, you know, you always felt like you could do it. And, you know, you didn't have very good guidance a lot of times in high school. You just played. And, I had a personal relationship with all my players, even right now today. I mean, I still thank God for Facebook and a lot of those things. My kids all get a hold of me. And I think it's because I probably spent more time with them than I did my own family. And, you know, if you convince kids that what you're doing and how you're doing it, and then can show them on the field, win or lose, that they're succeeding, it didn't have any problem getting new kids in. Our recruiting process, and, you know, at the junior college level that I had, we were suiting up almost 110 kids a year, which is really phenomenal. And part of that is how your coaches handle kids, how they talk to them, because we had, you know, most of my guys that coached for me were junior college prospects, and we all knew what it was like to be at that level and trying to establish an academic goal and how to get out of here, because we knew we could play football. Mm-hmm. Just had to take care of the school part of it.
Sure. Yeah, you want to be able to make sure they can read and write, right?
Right. And you want to make the academic part of it, I'm not going to say enjoyable, but something that they can accomplish. If they don't think they can do it, and a lot of them come out of schools where they just have been, you know, they just went to, you know, shop class or something like that. And yeah, played football.
Basket weaving 101, but he can kick a 60-yard field goal.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, a lot of them got in the homemaking classes.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned your assistant coaches, and I know they play a vital part in recruiting and the growth of these young players. So what kind of role do your assistant coaches and support staff play in this recruiting process?
Well, like in California, we have a lot of you know, they're districts. So your junior college has a district. Although kids can come from out of district to your school, you know, you have high schools that they tell you can recruit from. And, but you got your fingers out to everywhere, because you might get a kid out of, you know, San Diego, and we're in Los Angeles, and, somebody, you know, played for you. Somebody went to school where you're at or something, and they say, hey, we got this guy at, so-and-so, and you ought to take a look at him. So my coaches were all kind of assigned to different schools. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, just kind of like everybody, you know, you just try to get a hold of everybody, you know, and football right now is so wide open. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could say they're districts, but it has no restrictions. I mean, you can recruit a kid from San Diego or Northern California, and nine times out of 10, some some kid that played for me that's, you know, in Texas, and he calls me and says, hey, we got a guy at the school. And, you know, our big deal was, well, can he afford to come out? Does he have a place to live? All the little things. And we would try to take care of those things for him.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. The assistant coaches are almost like scouts in a way, right?
Oh, no question. And like my son's a head coach at a junior college right now. And I know his coaches all have areas or high schools. You have these five high schools, you know, you should do that. And then you have a guy that's kind of the head coordinator, and he puts all those together. And then what you do, you have like school visits with those kids. And it's not like the four-year level, it's all paid for, taken care of, you know, you keep them overnight, you take, you know, you feed them and all that. These are just visits that you can bring them over. Maybe you're having practice, which right now working with my son, their first time in the history of junior college football, they're actually getting in shoulder pads and helmets and everything in the spring. And it's almost like the 4-year thing right now.
Yeah.
And so you can bring them over. The big deal was a school visit. That was a big deal. And then I used to have them get with and we'd have an academic counselor that would talk to them. We had a recruit night where we'd show them film and talk to them, bring their families in. And, you know, it's a major deal. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole lot to it, especially if barbecue's included, right?
Well, we didn't have enough money to do that. We had burrito. In the area that I'm at, we had burritos and tacos.
There you go. Yep, absolutely. Well, Coach, I know you have a lot of priorities and as a head coach, right? And I guess my next question is going to be a little more detailed. How do you balance, and it's kind of the thing for life in general, but how do you balance your recruiting priorities with other responsibilities like such as coaching or player development or program management? How do you go about that? How do you balance that?
Well, recruiting's always kind of, you know, I don't say it's number one, but I mean, that starts it all. I mean, you got to get the players. I grew up with my coach when, well, I was coached and I taught, spent a lot of time. I think about it now, you know, we were 7 days a week. Sunday, we were there from 10 in the morning to 10 at night. We spent time evaluating what if a kid could make it academically. I mean, you have to sit down, you know, I never wanted to really get a kid in there and promise him, you know, success. And then I knew academically he was never going to make it. And, so it was hard to turn a lot of kids down basically because you knew it wasn't going to happen. And sometimes you would get the kid in because you know of his life, you know, what was going on in his life, that this was the best thing for him. And you prayed to God that you could have a lot of success for him for 2 years, actually. And in some cases, 3, because we had the redshirt possibility also. Mm-hmm. I was really, because fortunate to have great coaches that coached me, that took care of me personally. And, you know, I was running the streets as a crazy guy myself. And, you know, they got me in the right deal. I mean, you know, I got 90 units over my master's degree. I did really well academically. But to start out, I was just that guy that fell in love with a coach and he took care of me and put me in the right direction. And that's kind of how I do it. I kind of do things like I went through. You know, because I know how these kids are struggling when they're young. They don't understand a lot of things. And I was really I was a personal coach. I got involved with the kids personally, and I was more that guy. My coaches did all the kind of the tough things. I was like their good friend. I was tough on the kids. Yeah, I mean, yeah, because it's really funny. You got to understand what they watches TV. They all think they're going to be that guy. You know, it's a hard situation in some respects, but they all have that feeling in their thought, or they even come with an attitude sometimes football's changed so much. The scholarships are somewhat limited. You know, now with the new thing where they can pay these guys. I mean, there's so many things that a coach has to fight right now, because they think, you know, well, I can make $4 million out of high school and I can do, and some of them are.
Yeah.
And, you know, now, and you know how kids are, they all think they're there. And you know, yep. Well, I got to go to junior college because I didn't do good in school and I should be in the NFL.
Yep. No, I totally understand that. Coach, we've got to take a real quick commercial break here.
Okay.
Everybody's listening. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Dr. David Schoonover, your dedicated formation therapist. Feeling weighed down by life's challenges? Let's navigate them together. Whether it's sports psychology, relationships, or career struggles, I'm here to guide you towards clarity and healing. Take the first step towards a brighter tomorrow. Visit thelighthousesessions.com or call 702-518-4393. Schedule your consultation. I'm Dr. Schoonover. Together, let's illuminate your path and your inner light.
Listening to The Mind Coordinator with Dr. David Schoonover on KSHP, AM 1400, 107.1 FM, and VSX Digital Sports Network.
Okay, we are back talking with Coach Frank Mazzotta. Just a great conversation, just picking his brain here about some of the things he's done in his illustrious career.
But I was talking about a young man. I'm just trying to give you some examples. I mean,
yes.
I had a kid that got recruited, got a scholarship, came in, and he's going to go get on his flight to go to away to school, and he comes up and he's got his, all that he had was in a plastic bag. And I thought, can you believe that that's his belongings, was just a little bit of clothing in a plastic bag? And you know, I was telling you before we were breaking up, I have a major college coach that you would know who he is. He would most be really successful. I don't want to give his name, but
that's okay.
I used to stay after practice every day with him until about 9-10 o'clock at night, because he had nowhere to go. He didn't really have a home, and I didn't really realize, but he would sit and talk to me, and I, at the end he'd go, well, okay, and he'd go to some friend's house and sleep. And he ended up being, well, like I said, he's a major college football coach. And but that was my deal. I was really, you know, there's more to it than just the coaching part of it. The kids are so good, and, you know, and they want to succeed, and they just don't know how to do it. And like I was saying right now, football has changed so much because of the money. I don't think the scholarships are as available now as they were, because so many kids, so many schools playing football.
Sure.
So
yeah.
It's a real challenge to get a kid a scholarship today, I think. And I fortunately did it long enough that I knew enough 4-year college coaches that they would always come in and recruit our kids. And part of that being because we had a lot of successful kids play.
Yeah. It's a whole different ballgame these days with the NIL. You're right. Some of these kids will come out of, they'll go to college and they'll be millionaires and they'll never play pro ball.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's a tough thing. Coach,
it's hard for the 4-year.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think it's really difficult for the 4-year coach, too. I mean, they're limited in scholarships. These kids all have – I mean, I think it's the whole money in that is really, I think, hurt the game. I really am happy that I'm not really involved in it every day right now, because I think the kids have changed, the game's changed, and, you know, the money's really – affected what's going on, I think, personally.
Yeah, I would have to agree. It'll come to a head at some point. Something's going to have to happen.
Yeah. Well, I think they're all afraid to. That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's what's the old saying? He who has the most gold makes the rules. So you're going to take teams like, let's say, Michigan or Florida or Texas or somebody, and they've got a ton of it, and you're basically just a recruiting station for the pros, right?
You know, before, you know, I really active about getting a scholarship so you could get a college education. Now it's get a scholarship so maybe you can make some money. That's, you know, totally different.
Yep.
I,
But I go to my son's practice. And son was a head coach for that.
Coach, don't interrupt, but if you moved or something, move back to where you were. We got a little bit of that.
I haven't moved a bit.
There you go. But, there you go. Yeah. Right, I'm sorry.
Maybe a little louder. That might be it.
Oh, maybe so. Okay.
But I was son that's also a head coach at high school level, and I can see the difference of the kids. The goals seem to be, you know, instead of playing and having fun, there's a little bit different philosophy. Right?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Yeah, motivating high school kids would be, you know, maybe getting a pizza after the game, you know, but it's a little different with the
college. Yeah, nothing anymore.
That's right. That's right. Self-actualization. I want to talk about that a little bit, Coach. Of course, this is, you know, relating back to Abraham Maslow and his hierarchy, but most people don't understand self-actualization. They never ask the question why. Like, why do I act or react? Or how do I, you know, do this when this happens? What are my go-to emotions? Those kind of things. So in my business with the Lighthouse Sessions, one of the first things I do with all my clients is we delve right into self-actualization. I want them, and I want myself, to know who I'm really dealing with. And for the most part, when you first meet people, they're going to tell you what they want you to know about them. Yeah. And then it becomes a little different, right? So there's some testing and some questions I ask. And when we have our first session, I'm able to speak right to them because you're hardwired from birth to death. You process thought the same way. Now, if you, and let me just say that the percentages of my accuracy are in the 90 to 95% range. So when I'm talking to somebody, I know exactly how to motivate this guy, right? So what kind of or self-actualization, what does that mean to you personally, and how do you use that as a coach?
Wow, now you're getting testing my academic part of me. But, you know, the thing that I think you're trying to get at is how do you get a kid to realize what he is or what he isn't and what I can offer that? Is that what you're kind of asking me?
Well, that plus, how do you know? How do you know that you're communicating with this guy?
Or
lady?
We do. Yeah, we do. Yeah, I did a lot of one-on-ones. And again, I'm going to tell you, I was a kid that came from the area like a lot of them. So it was easy for me to, you know, talk to them about some of the problems they're having, or what they really aspire and what they're trying to do. And so I thought I could relate a little bit because it's one of those, I think I've been there. Mm-hmm. And, that was a big part of what I did. What are you? What do you want to do? Do you think you can accomplish that? You know, and a lot of kids don't even know how or even thought about stuff like that. And, you know, it's just that they're there and this is it and I can do that and that's it. They don't realize, you know, what goals they have, how good they would be at doing it, and not just the football part of it. You know, I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly, but you know, a lot of ours had to do with academics because the football part of it was, you know, there, we already knew that. We knew what they wanted to do. We knew their accomplishment, you know, but we had to kind of convince them, this is what you got to do it. Mm-hmm. And can you think that you can do that stuff? Because you haven't done it so far. Can you do it, you know, to get to the goal that you have? You know, I don't know if I'm answering your question correctly, but that.
No, it's okay. That's all right.
Yeah. I'm not as academic as you. You
gotta remember. No, it's okay. That. No, it's all right. You're doing fine, Coach. Yeah, self-actualization is just really Carl Jung once said that he who looks outward dreams. He who looks inward awakens. Now, I'm not talking about woke. I'm just talking about understanding who you are, why you act and react a certain way, right? And I'll tell you, it's been my experience, Coach, that most people never delve into that, and they never ask the simple question, why? Why do I do this? And I'll give you an example, Coach. You and I can both think of a time or two where we've said something or done something, but, oh, gosh, I shouldn't have done that or I shouldn't have said that, right?
Yeah.
And then we start getting into it and the superegos when they start demanding that we act a certain way. But most people don't have a clue, and I call it the hamster wheel. They just keep doing the same thing over and over and over. There's no change. The same thing applies in sports, whether it's women's or men's, high school, college, pro. It's the same thing. They don't really understand it. They don't ask, and they spend a lot of time, coaches do, on the external, right? So we want to make sure, like in college, you might have a tutor for your classes, right? And then you're going to go to practice. You're going to learn the plays. You're going to stick them in the weight room. You have a nutritionist. You're going to feed them a couple steaks. You're going to get them where you want them. But how much, and it sounds like you're right on this, how much time do coaches or assistant coaches actually spend time understanding the person and help them understand who they are?
Well, I'm not sure I can answer it correctly, but I know at the level that I coached, that was really a challenge because we didn't have all the things that we could offer or give them. And so we had to take that part of it and make everything that we did a positive deal to show them they could achieve what they wanted to achieve. You know, a lot of them come with bad home lives. They have bad attitudes. They want to accomplish certain things, but they just didn't know how to do it. So we were basically like counselors for them too. I mean, not only do we coach football, the external things were huge. You know, the family life, were they going to eat? Were they going to go to school? Were they going to study? Did they have a place to study?
Absolutely.
You know, all those things at our level was really, really difficult. And, you know, a lot of times when they get out of high school, they're left on their own. I mean, there's not a great home life. You know, they didn't have moms and dads sitting, you know, making sure they do their schoolwork. We had to do that at our level. We had to really do that because we had promised those kids that we were going to get them out of there and help them get scholarships and play football at the next level. So we had to really do that. We became counselors for them more than coaches in a lot of respects.
Certainly. You're wearing multiple hats. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how to explain to you the level that we were coaching at. It's different than high school. It was different than the four-year level, and I did both, so I know. The junior college level is probably the most, it's rewarding, number one, because you get kids that are poor students that, you know, whatever, and they accomplish great things. And that was, you know, at four-year level, I remember we got kids, they were already good, they were already scholarshiped, and they played good. At the junior college level, it was more, you know, you were the father in a lot of cases, you were a mentor, you were the food guy, you did everything. Everything at our level. And I loved it because I got to know kids a lot better than when I coached the four-year level. You didn't get to know the kids that well. Right. And I had an opportunity to know every kid. You know, that was the kid. You had to know every kid and every problem. Yeah. And it's pretty rewarding in that regard. Even today, I have kids that just thank me for putting them on the right track, you know, helping them just get through life a little bit, you know, and they still talk. You know, Mark Hayes, a young man that you know. That's the kids that I had to be around.
Coach, I'm sorry. You need to move back to where you were.
I just thought I'd move a bit.
We're having a little.
I still have a rotary dial phone.
There you go. There we're good. I'm sorry. We're good.
I still have a rotary phone, you know, rotary dial phone.
Ah.
you know what that is? You know what that is? Am I aging myself?
I used to use one to call to see what time it was. Yeah.
Well, do you even know what a rotary dial phone is?
Oh, I certainly do. Yeah, I used to have one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how old I am, so I get that.
Yeah, we're probably not too far off on age, Coach. That's for sure. Well, Coach, listen, what you're telling me, I thoroughly understand that, and I'll tell you that you are in the minority by far. because I think that if a lot of coaches would adhere to that, getting into their lives, understanding what's going on, helping these develop these young men and women as people versus commodities, right? I think that just would just help them so much more, right? It's really self-discovery, I guess, that you're helping these young people with. So let me ask, Coach, is there any particular exercise or practice that you use to promote this introspection or this kind of reflection?
Well, I go to my son's practice. I don't coach a position anymore or anything like that, but they call me the OG, you know, the old guy. And so what I do is I don't know how to explain it, but I'm going to go back to my life. You know, when I grew up, I had great coaches that took me under that. It didn't have really a whole lot to do with football. They just, whatever. And I go around to the kids and my kids' practices and I pull them aside and talk to them about different things. You know, I can see the kid that's got a frown and, you know, he didn't do something very good or whatever. And, you know, right away they all tried to say, well, you know, I'm going to ruin my life. You know, I try to make, I walk around and talk to them about things other than football. And I do help them with the football part of it too. But I just know that the type of attitude you can instill in these kids, especially in success and success for themselves. And, you know, a lot of them don't, you know, have that ability to feel good about themselves, and especially some of these low income kids. And I just go by, you know, I'm a pat her on the back guy and talk to them about, you know, different things, you know, their girlfriends or their home life or whatever. Sure. So
life in general,
exactly. Yeah. And it pays off on the football field. I don't care what anybody says. You got to have a personal relationship with those kids.
That's right. Absolutely. All right, Coach, we are going to step away here for a minute, pay some bills, and we will be right back. Everybody hang tight.
You're listening to The Mind Coordinator with Dr. David Schoonover on KSHP, AM 1400, 107.1 FM, and VSX Digital Sports Network.
You're tuned into the VSX Digital Sports Network.
Embark on this thrilling journey into sports leadership with me, Dr. David Schoonover, every Sunday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on KSHP, exclusively on the VSX Digital Sports Network. Gain valuable insight into the minds of coaches, executives, and administrators as we uncover the secrets of coaching brilliance. Tune in for exclusive revelations and endless inspiration. Be sure to catch every moment each Sunday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., right here live on KSHP 107.1 FM, 1400 AM.
You're listening to The Mind Coordinator with Dr. David Schoonover on KSHP, AM 1400, 107.1 FM, and VSX Digital Sports Network.
All right, we are back. We are with Coach Frank Posada and his just valuable insight into coaching. Coach, we were talking about self-actualization a little bit. I want to delve into that just a little more. And I want you to think about this one. And this would apply to coaches and assistant coaches as well, but specifically with your players. You have to ask yourself, how many people do you know of these players, assistant coaches, and yourself are living their life 100% true to themselves?
Wow. That's a huge question. As far as players, you know, I can only say the ones that maybe have gone on, got their degrees, or might be even playing the NFL or play in the NFL, but are successful in business or whatever. If you're asking me for a percentage, I don't know. I always think the kids that have gone on and played and got their degrees, they've fulfilled their goal. Now, whether it's the right goal, you know, some of them had to go into another field. I don't know, but I know in my own experience, it's crazy how I got into coaching. I was working as a coach at the University of Utah, and I had a night job, the truck line. And the only reason I came back and got into coaching for real was my dad passed away. I came home, and my high school coach got me a job at the high school. And because I couldn't stay and coach at the four-year level at the University of Utah. And I don't know where I would have been. I don't know that I had the goals set at that time either. And I know a lot of these kids don't. They go through the process. They get their degrees. They do things. And I would say probably 50% of them or more don't even go into the field that they work at, you know.
Sure.
So I know a lot of them that I played with, especially their degrees had nothing to do with what they ended up doing in life. So I don't think they realize at the time or even when they're doing it that what they're trying to accomplish is what they do. You know, I think it all changes. You know, I mean, you've been around enough young people and people to know that, you know, you have certain goals or you think you do, but right. You can't reach them or you don't reach them, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I try to do that when I'm coaching. I really try to, you know, cause I tried to make football wasn't all. I mean, they had to understand that you got to have some goals and what you think you're going to be doing 10 years from now. Exactly. Right now it's funding and, you know, and that was, I did that. And I always, I don't know. I'm just different. I was really, cause I guess that was what coaches did for me. And I always tried to do that. I tried to get it to separate it from the football, you know, make it something that, you know, there's going to be about 2 or 3 months here that you're going to be on your own. You know, there's not going to be football. There's not going to be anybody making sure you go to school or whatever. So,
yeah, that's true. It's so true.
I tried to do that as a head coach, you know.
That's wonderful. Yeah. You know, and the self-actualization coach, it's really just the realization of somebody's full potential. And
right. High
school or community college level, the 2-year, I don't think they know. And I'll tell you, it's been my experience with dealing with pro athletes and college athletes and coaches that no one really spends the time. They don't really understand how to. And if there's a problem, then they refer to somebody else and they move on.
Exactly. Especially, and I'm telling you, the kids, well, coaches, if there's any negative to coaching or coaches, and I would think a little bit more even at the, I don't know, but they don't look to what's going to happen when this is done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're interested in getting the kid, you know, eligible, getting the kid practice, getting the kid in the weight room. You know, don't think about, well, all of a sudden it's over, and what do you do now? And that was a big deal with me because I was kind of proud of the kids that I could get out and be successful. So I had a wall in my weight room that showed where every kid went. You know, I tried to take that and make it a motivation for the kids that are playing for me. And,
certainly.
I tried to teach them goals. I tried to get the discipline, the hard work, showing up every day. All those were things that I thought were important. And then I would try to show them the successful kids that I had and what they did that probably came from worse backgrounds than they had. Mm-hmm. And so I just think the level I was at, I loved it because it was more motivation than anything else, you know.
Right. And, you know, and coming from your background, Coach, you can relate to these guys a lot easier than someone who didn't, I would say.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you mentioned a lot, Coach. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
You're good. Well, I was just going to say I know a lot of coaches that have not had it tough in their lives, you know.
Yeah.
they've gone from here to there to there, and they were, you know, good kids, successful people, did, you know, and they're coaching and happy as can be. And a lot of them, you know, I just know a lot of them, you know, not a lot of them, but I know coaches that just don't spend the time with the home life thing. That to me was a big deal. I got to know their families, you know, the whole deal. And I know the 4-year guys, they'll go into the home, you know, one time on a home visit, but there's a lot more to it than the home visit, you know.
Well, certainly.
There's a lot more to it.
Yeah. Well, Coach, you touched on something a minute ago that's really important too. It's when sport ends, right? So by the time people are, you know, they're between the ages of 17 and 22, they're predominantly done playing sports. And,
right.
You know, minus the, you know, this very, very small amount that actually go on to play professionally. But, you know, since the age of 7 or 8 years old, these young people they're coached to pursue the external world of sport, right? And all of a sudden it's gone. There's a big void
right.
there. And yeah. And when that happens, many times their identity just falls apart and they need help. Unfortunately, in our days and times that we're in now, help comes in the form of anti-anxiety medicines or anti-depression right. medication, right? And statistically, the use of those meds, it increases in men and women who've been involved in sports since they were young. And when they,
right.
when they reach their early 20s, then it's a mess, right? We're destroying these kids with extrinsic motivation as a primary driver, right? So
right.
We have to take a look at the culture that we set up. And, Coach, I'd like you to expound on that a little bit. It sounds like you have, in your coaching days, have really set a good culture for these young people. Who is in charge of building your culture, and how do you do it?
Well, you know, I always thought that came from me, the head coach. You know, the assistant coaches all have a different I would assign certain coaches to take care of some of the academic stuff or whatever, but philosophically and guiding the kids and that and taking care of all the personal stuff, that was me. I thought that if I did it, the kids would pay attention more, or it probably would mean more to them, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
And because I'm the leader, like I said, I wanted to get their goals straight and they would listen to me. I think then my defensive line coach, he's more interested in how they play and not necessarily what's going to happen with them. But I number one, I was really set on teaching them discipline because a lot of them had, that's part of the reason they were doing poor in school or whatever. You know, like, and their work ethic, that was huge. And you know, these kids, just showing up every day for class or showing up every day for work or showing up, you had to teach them that because that's part of the problem. They were at the level they were at with me. And even when I coached at the 4-year level, that was part of it. You got to get them motivated to do their work because they all think, well, I'm going to be in the NFL or whatever, but that doesn't happen that way.
Right.
And, you know, in reality, when you get done, you better have something to show for this. So that better be that little piece of paper that says I graduated, you know.
Certainly.
Because you can go and play and not get that, and then you're looking at everybody like, well, how did I do that? How did I screw up? You know, well, part of that, somebody's got to guide you in the right direction, personally.
That's right, yeah. And, you know, Coach, that all kind of makes a full circle back to mental health of coaching, mental health of the players, and are we really focused on that, right? So in your coaching
Correct.
Experience, how do you prioritize mental health and the well-being of your players within that coaching philosophy or the program?
Well, you're with them every day. I probably spend more time with a kid than their parents or anybody else. I mean, you're with them 3/4 of their day. Mm-hmm. It goes back to just try to set a good example. I mean, I could always talk to kids about personal, experiences. And fortunately, I had enough kids that probably did everything that they've done and tried to show them you can be successful if you just do the right things. Doing right was a big deal. That was one of our goals. Do right, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
And, you know, a lot of them have, they don't know how to do that. They're so young and immature. And again, I go back to what they see on TV now. It looks so easy. You know, here's a guy that just made $4 million. It's not that easy.
Right.
You know, they get their personal trainers. They get all these. Those guys don't get into the mental part of it.
Right.
And I don't know how to say it, but I spent more time with that with kids. I mean, I was off the field with kids talking about just life. I do it today. You know, you got to realize it just doesn't happen. You know, you see it on TV. It doesn't happen. You got to, you got to be disciplined enough to do the things that are right. And a lot of kids, their home lives or whatever, they don't have that kind of guidance. And, you know, you got to be that mentor. That's the deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Coach, I think that if especially in college, I think if, you know, college universities throughout the country, they always have some sort of mental awareness or mental health options for these athletes. And unfortunately, there's such a stigma that goes along with them. But I don't see these young men and women taking advantage of that. And I'll tell you why I hear that, because you'll hear of a pro player who's, you know, going 100 miles an hour downtown through his car, he gets arrested, he's drunk, he or she goes into a nightclub with a gun. I feel that if the college level, if they were to actually promote and remove that stigma, to understand how mental wellness, how to promote mental wellness, how to build resilience with your athletes, that would actually change their lives forever. As again, as we know, only a small portion are going to play pro ball. So I would ask Coach, now I get talking with them and you've lived a life that they can relate to, but how, as a coach at the college level, how do you create a safe and supportive environment where these players, they feel comfortable discussing any kind of mental health concerns or seeking support?
Well, that's a big question. I think a lot of kids, they don't have trust, you know, and that, as a coach, you have to build that trust, because they won't bring you their problems and I know at the 4-year level, you're really not with them, you know, day to day, long time, you know, whatever. You have counselors, you have all that, but as a coach, sometimes you don't spend that day to day, time with them they don't understand experiences and stuff like that. So you got to talk to them about it. A lot of those kids, they don't know anything else but a hard life.
Right.
And if you don't explain to them how to achieve, you know, these things, you know, and it takes hard work, and it really is hard for the coach, you know, because these kids, you know, now, like, again, I'm going to go back to now. It would be so hard for me to think these kids, they don't see anything except dollars sometimes. And if you don't talk to them a certain way, or you don't encourage that, you know, they're not even going to listen to you, because right. They all think they're going to be millionaires.
Right.
And, I don't know. It always became personal with me. I didn't. You know, like, I know at the 4-year level, you know, you got the kid, he comes to practice, goes away, and boom, he goes home, goes to the dormitory, gets his meals, everything is taken care of. But the high school level guys and the junior college guys, you become like family. And, you know, a lot of times you have to figure out a way, you can make it, you're going to get a meal here, you're going to get a meal there, and, you know, somebody's going to take care of you. You know, you got goals. You got to set your goals and take care of it and work hard and show up every day. Mm-hmm. those are big deals especially at the junior college level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The whole thing about this, these kids, like you said, they're coming from bad neighborhoods, bad families, yet they're gifted athletes. And there's a lot on their plate that they are not telling you, right? And you know that because
you've
recruited them, you've been in their home, you see how it goes. So how do you, all right, so now, Coach, they're on your team, you got the guy you want, they're in the right position, but how do you, as a coach, how do you recognize any kind of signs of mental health issues or distress in your players, and then how do you respond to those concerns?
Well, there's, you know, becomes personal. You know, I think you feel, you know, when you're in the business, yeah, I can tell by talking to kids. I can tell by their body language. I could tell, and I know a little bit about their family to begin with. And you can always tell, the kid that's having trouble. I mean, it's not a hard deal, especially in athletics. Their performance on the field or how they act on the field. A lot of them act out by being, they'll start fights. They'll do all kinds of things. You know, you just got to be aware of that stuff. But again, I think as a coach, especially at my level or even high school level, you got to spend some time to find out what's going on at home. And the kids don't want to tell you, but they will tell you. And I think as a coach, you got to kind of work at that a little bit. Because it's easy to get them out on the field and, you know, run here, run there, block there, block there. That's easy.
Sure.
But getting them, because it's an emotional deal. And I think they play a lot of times good or bad, depending on what's going on at home.
And, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's where it starts, Coach. Yeah.
Well, there's no question. And you know, a lot of the great players that you see playing today have not had great home lives. And, you know, everything's peaches and cream right now for them in their lives. But, you know, I could name a bunch of guys that have played in the NFL that are millionaires now. But, you know, if you knew anything about their home life, boy, you don't know how the hell they even made it, you know. And,
gotcha.
You know, and as a coach, you know, you're, you know, as a coach, you become family, and boy, they trust you, and you got to do the things that, you know, you got to do the things that, you know, have been successful and that they could, and you got to be sharp at knowing what they can succeed at.
Right. And you got, and you said it, Coach, it's all about trust. That's for sure. Coach, we are going to have to take another quick little break here. Everybody hang tight. We're having some great information here with Coach.
You're listening to The Mind Coordinator with Dr. David Schoonover on KSHP, AM 1400, 107.1 FM, and VSX Digital Sports Network.
I'm Dr. David Schoonover, your dedicated formation therapist. Feeling weighed down by life's challenges? Let's navigate them together. Whether it's sports psychology, relationships, or career struggles, I'm here to guide you towards clarity and healing. Take the first step towards a brighter tomorrow. Visit thelighthousesessions.com or call 702-518-4393. Schedule your consultation. I'm Dr. Schoonover. Together, let's illuminate your path and your inner light. Ladies and gentlemen, I extend a warm invitation to all team owners, coaches, and administrators to join us on the Mind Coordinator Show. We delve deep into the realm of mental health, performance optimization, and personal growth strategies that can revolutionize how we approach sports and team dynamics. Our platform is dedicated to fostering mental resilience, enhancing team cohesion, and exploring the latest insights in sports psychology. Don't miss this opportunity to engage in enlightening discussions and gain valuable perspectives to elevate your team's success on and off the field. Tune into the Mind Coordinator and be part of a transformative journey towards peak performance and well-being.
How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to let your band members in Vegas, Phoenix, and Rhode Island jam like you're all in the same garage. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox internet is powered by fiber and connected to the premises via coaxial cable. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply.
As a major research institution, Arizona State University offers the most online bachelor's degree programs, along with world-class faculty and dedicated support. Discover why ASU is ranked number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years. Tap to learn more.
Embark on this thrilling journey into sports leadership with me, Dr. David Schoonover, every Sunday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on KSHP, exclusively on the VSX Digital Sports Network.
gain valuable insight into the minds of coaches, executives, and administrators as we uncover the secrets of coaching brilliance. Tune in for exclusive revelations and endless inspiration. Be sure to catch every moment each Sunday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m., right here live on KSHP 107.1 FM, 1400 AM.